Morning, morning all. How are we? Hope we're well. It's been a while. I've had 6 weeks of not doing any of these. Life got a little bit busy. So I'm back. And we're back with a guy who I have known for about 4 years, a chap called David Gray. He's the founder and main face behind David Gray Rehab. He is someone who has previously also learned from the likes of Gary Ward, who if well, which is where I met him, through the hangouts that we used to have in Ireland. He has gone on to have a very successful rehab business, working with some of the top athletes in the world and selling out workshops all around the world, teaching people all about movement using the likes of kind of isometrics, plyometrics, other bits and pieces. Just his knowledge that he's gained from studying with loads of people and similar to me, constantly trying to work out why he's in pain and how he can get out of it so he can enjoy his life. I hope you enjoy this episode. It was cool to do and it's nice to catch up with Dave. There's the links to all of his bits and pieces in the show notes, so you can go and find them there. And then we'll be back again very soon. We've got Lauren Ahern, who is all about the pelvic floor and women's health down below, giving people a much, well, yeah, I'd say a very positive outlook on being able to move and breathe and exercise and live if you've had pelvic floor issues in the past or currently. And that's going to be coming up after this one in a few weeks. But for now, let's enjoy me and Dave chatting. Hope you enjoy it and let me know what you think. Please do take a moment to go and like, subscribe, and follow, and all of that stuff that we always ask you to do. It really does make a huge difference to helping me get the podcast out and about and seen. And then, yeah, if you like, leave me a comment, tell me what you thought, and we'll catch up very soon. Have a great day, girls. Right, welcome back, everybody. Welcome to Move, Breathe, Live. It's good to have you all here again. I'm pretty stoked to be chatting to, I'm gonna say my mate Dave because we've hung out and he's taken photos of my feet and played with them. So that class is if you're not a friend when you played with someone's feet, I don't know what you are. David Gray, thank you very much for joining me.
Wibbs, thank you very much for having me. Pleasure, man. I'm looking forward to the chat and definitely meet.
Exactly. So I've known Dave, I don't know, pre-COVID now. So it must be 4 years ago, I guess. I mean, I did my, we kind of met through Anatomy in Motion, and then hanging out in Ireland, I guess, and sort of learning more about that there. But maybe you can just fill us in a little bit about your journey because you've obviously done some of the same stuff that I have. And but you've also got way more of a background in different things than I have, and where you're working and who you're working with is probably a slightly different to me. But yeah, give us a bit of a background.
I'll keep it super short. So I think I suppose who I'm working with now is a mix of athletes, let's say, gen pop, but usually I like to mostly work with people who are active or would like to be more active than they are. So they're kind of being held back a little bit by injury or a little bit of pain or maybe neither of those things, but they're just not moving particularly as well as they would like. So that's the people that I like to work with. I don't like to have to really convince people to like that you should be moving more or not moving more, but like you should that exercise is important. I'm not interested in working with there's it's not that it's not important to convince people, but I don't want to be the one that has to convince people. I usually like to work with people who know that it's important, but it's just not feeling as good as they would like at the moment. And that ranges from like professional athletes all the way down to just people who want to be able to go for a run or walk better or whatever. I don't really mind. And then there's another, that's kind of 50% of, let's say, our business. And then the other 50% is like teaching other coaches and therapists. So just teaching them about like the things that I like to do, not saying it's right or wrong or whatever, just like, if you're interested in learning this, this is what I do. So it's kind of 50-50 there. And how I got there, super shortened version, is basically like, was a very injured athlete for a long time, very frustrated with my own body, very frustrated with the care that I was receiving over the years. And I tried to like, not, I always say like, figure it out for myself, but that doesn't mean like I just locked myself in a room. It was more like just like, just go and meet loads of different people that were in the conventional space and weren't in the conventional traditional space of how we think about movement. So I just kind of traveled around the world, met loads of really smart people, continue to meet loads of smart people and learn from smart people, which is really fun. Something I love doing, chatting to good people. And along the way, I just kind of started coaching, and then just from there, it kind of developed into
the monster that is David Gray Rehab.
Well, I wouldn't say the monster, but like, I don't know what I would call it, but yeah, that's I suppose how we somehow found our way to where we are today.
Yeah, I think that's probably, I mean, I think you and I and many of us who have probably stepped outside of the traditional or orthodox path, let's say, probably have all done it in the same way of like, oh my God, I'm so fed up with always being in pain and whatever else. Why, you know, science says this should work, but it's clearly not. So what the hell am I going to do instead? And I've been exactly the same, you know, right knee, like I could run 5, 10, maybe 15K, and then it would always be like, no more. And it wasn't just like, oh, I could run through this. It's like, nah, you're going to limp for the rest of what, like 2 weeks, and you can't do anything on it. And it didn't matter what a physio said, do this, do that, rub it, ice it, cold it, what, yeah, nothing ever seemed to work. And so, you know, I think there's probably a whole bunch of athletes and just gen pop who probably feel exactly the same on that one.
Yeah, there's a lot of people out there frustrated, and that's the thing with our bodies, like, as well, where it's super complex. We don't really know exactly what's going on, especially when it comes to pain. So we actually don't know what's going to help people necessarily. We're there. We're trying to make an educated guess as much as we can. We're trying to use things that are relatively successful and repeatable, but we actually don't know for sure what's going to help. So anything could help. The traditional stuff could help. The non-traditional stuff could help. I don't even know what that means when I say that, traditional versus non-traditional, but I just like to keep my mind open and have as many different tools as possible to try and help the person in front of me as I can.
Yeah, I think I heard on one of your podcasts the other day, you froze a little bit there, so I don't know if you said this or not, but like, it's what's so important about, say, someone's pain is actually quite often is actually just acknowledging it and actually giving them it, like making them like aware that perhaps, yeah, you are in pain, and you know, you are different, and maybe your life has led through to this part. And you know, I've had numerous people who, just by being able to kind of maybe give them an idea, you know, even if it's not exactly it, just giving them an idea of postural awareness and just being like, this isn't necessarily why you're in pain, but we could see potentially why this might cause you pain. And for them to kind of go, oh, basically all I've been told up to this point is that, like, I've just got pain and it's kind of idiopathic in nature, essentially, and it's kind of tough that, you know, you go to a doctor, it's like, yes, you've kind of got this, just take some painkillers. And you know, from my nursing perspective, the reason I left nursing was because there was so many people turning up to A&E with hip, knee, back pain, ankle pain, who just they all moved like shit. And actually, you know, having better movement would be such a good starting place for them to be able to potentially move away from pain.
Yeah, I think it comes back to options, and I think it's important to acknowledge, like, especially when you're the authority, like, which we tend to be within with our clients, right? So like, our client comes in and they're expecting you to have all the answers, or they want you to have all the answers. Now, actually, a lot of people completely lose faith in like the industry completely, because everyone in the past has claimed like, oh, like, this is the person that's going to fix you. I'm the person, I'm the next person. So like, maybe they've completely lost faith, but in general, like, that you're the authority in the relationship. They look at you that way and they expect you to have the answers. But especially when it comes to pain, we actually don't have the answers. And that's the tricky part. And even when someone, like, if someone has pain and then we do something and next thing they don't have pain anymore, we actually don't even know, like, yeah, we can say, like, I think it worked for this reason, but I'm not actually sure. Was it because, like, we got your bones moving in a different way? Was it because we got your muscles loading? Was it because your brain improved, like, a sense of that area? There's, and that goes on and on and on. So there's a million different reasons. So we can't be sure. But what I can say relatively surely is, like, similar things seem to help a lot of people, which is, like, making sure your lifestyle is, not lifestyle, but making sure your life is relatively in order. So, like, your sleep, your nutrition. Although, actually, I will say nutrition seems to vary completely. Like, I won't even mention nutrition. So I'll say sleep, your relationships. Most people seem to need to have some good relationships in their life. Some sense of, like, achievement in your life, or you're working kind of towards something, or on something, or on yourself. You're not just, like, a slob who's not trying to improve anything in your life. Some a relatively decent amount of movement, so, like, just how much you're moving throughout the day, and then a relatively decent amount of, like, movement variability, so how much different your movement is throughout the day. So those, and then some strength as well, so, like, a little bit of strength and then a little bit of fun in your life. And I think if you can start to look at all those buckets for someone that comes in pain, you can start to maybe see where they're a little bit more empty or a little bit more full, and you can start to fill up some of those buckets. Or maybe some of them are overflowing. Maybe they're moving way too much. Maybe they're loading way too much in a specific way. So we can start to play around with that. And even at the end of the day, if we don't exactly know why, this is the exact reason why your pain is gone, it actually doesn't matter. It's more, it's just like we just did some things that were helpful to you. Now, we want to be careful that we don't just throw 100 different things at loads of shit at the wall. And then, yes, like, now you're out of pain, but next time when it comes back, or like, it's not, you haven't really learned anything in that instance. So we just want to, like, tweak some variables, the most obvious elephants in the room, let's say. And usually I think that tends to help a lot of people, even if we don't know exactly, you know, why all of the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, like you said, that probably a lot of us who are doing this similar journey kind of have that idea of wanting to give agency to our, like, clients, so that you can try something, and if it works, then potentially they don't necessarily have to come back and see you next time. Because if it comes back, go, well, this kind of worked last time, so we can maybe give it a go again, which I kind of feel like is certainly from, and again, I'm not going to lump all physios and chiros and osteopaths in the same bucket, but maybe chiros, I don't know. You know, essentially, most of the time, it's very much been like, come see me, I'll needle you and crack you, and then come back in 6 weeks, we'll do it again. And it's kind of, I always found that very disempowering, and I kind of would go maybe twice and never really, you know, maybe I'd feel better for a little bit, but, you know, I think being able to, and through your programs, which we'll come onto in a bit, I guess, but it's so simple how someone can actually have, like, take agency and go, I'm going to try this, and it's stuff I do to myself. It does come back to that point that you made of they've got to want to do it. But if they're in pain and they're that fed up, they're probably going to, like, try and do something.
Pain is a great motivator. That's a good thing. And, well, I would say actually more so, like, what the pain is stopping you from doing is a great motivator. So, like, if you're not able to go for a run anymore, maybe you don't really care about knee pain, but you care that the knee pain is stopping you from running. And now you care that because you actually usually go for a run with your friends, and now you're actually missing the social aspect. So that's a great motivator. And I think it's changing. I think it's slowly changing. Like, the industry is slowly getting better, maybe getting worse at the same time. Like, there's obviously a polarization going to happen, but I've met a lot of, like, I've been traveling around a lot. Everyone always thinks, like, in my area, it's just shit. Like, in Ireland, it's shit. Or in England, it's shit. But in America, it must be amazing. In Australia, it must be amazing. But every time I go to a new place, like, they are saying, oh, it's shit here. Shit. Like, is it? Maybe it's better somewhere else. But in general, there's starting to be at least an acknowledgement, like, that, okay, this needs to be better. definitely, like, I've met a lot of good chiros, good physios. So it's all different professions. So I don't think it's down to the profession. It's just everyone is starting to kind of meet in the middle a little bit. Strength and conditioning, physio, chiro, osteo. They're all kind of coming into the middle a little bit, which is like, okay, let's just help. Let's treat people as people. Let's help them move a bit better. Let's get them a little bit stronger. Let's talk to them. And all those kind of different ways of working, while they can still have them, they're all coming back to like the principles behind what makes a person and what makes a happy person a happy person, which is usually similar things. So I think we're getting there, but the industry like has deep root. It's deeply rooted in like it's this is why I don't even like to call it like the health industry. I prefer to think of like what we do slightly more in terms of like the fitness industry, even though fitness is a bad word and there's negative connotations and there's a lot of bullshit there as well. But in the health industry, you're dealing with like pharmaceuticals there, you're dealing with surgeries, you're dealing with cancers, you're dealing with doctors. So like
illness,
illness, pathology. Now we can deal with pathology and pain as well, but you're dealing like there's, it's such a broad scope there within the health industry. Whereas, so I try and like almost separate ourselves a little bit from that, but we're still like deep rooted within that. And that,
yes,
if you go to the States, like someone goes to a physiotherapist or a physical therapist, as they're called over there, and they're usually like an insurance-based clinic, and they're going to go for 20 sessions because they have 20 sessions on their insurance that their insurance is going to pay for. So there's absolutely no incentive for that physical therapist to treat them in any way, like, or give them any power, because why would they? They're just going to come for 20 sessions regardless. And at the same time as you're there, there's going to be 2, 3, 4, 5 other clients or patients in there at the same time as you. So literally you're just getting a machine put on you, or you're going on an exercise bike for 5 minutes, or you're doing some terrible crappy exercise and you're coming back 3 times a week. So there's just, it all comes back to incentive, and a lot of the industry is not incentivized to help their clients. And that's an issue.
I mean, that kind of makes, you know, going to myself, I've had like numerous shoulder injuries from like snowboarding, like sub, like a dislocation, then like it would sub, like I'd throw a ball and it would just like, and I got sent to a surgeon, and he was like, you need to go and do physio first. This was before I'd kind of taken any deep dives into any of this stuff, but like, I'm very glad I didn't have surgery. But you know, I went to the hospital physio, and it was, you know, 15 other people. And, my headphone just died. I didn't realize where that was. I'll just quickly change that back to that, otherwise I won't be able to hear you. It was like 15 other people, and it was just, you know, basically the worst physio ever. Like, it was so shit. And, you know, then I, you know, started getting into yoga and all, but I've now learned so much more, and I kind of look back at it and go, exactly like you said, how much things are rooted into that medical world, and how much even everyone relies on, I've got, you know, back pain, hip pain, well, I will go and see the doctor. And then it's almost like there isn't a thought of how can we move you better, or how can you move better, let's say. It's like, let's check for pathology straight away, and then we'll kind of go all the way down the pathology route, and if nothing shows up, then we will just give you painkillers and tell you to get on with it, essentially.
That's a tricky one. And like, even if the pathology does show up, what usually now what we know is, what was the best answer anyway? It was like, okay, just live a better life, strength train, all these things. So, but we're learning, like, it's a young industry. It's getting better slowly. It's getting worse slowly at the same time. And it's always going to be a fight between the two. And it just comes back to incentive, that everything, if you ever want to look at someone's actions, like, you have to look at what the incentive behind the actions are. And if you go to a physio, why would they, I don't mean physio, like any therapist in that kind of industry, why would they want you to, why would they want to give you the tools to get you better or you to work away on yourself when, yeah, they, when you come in the first session, second session? They want you there. The incentive is for them, for you to keep coming back. And for you to keep coming back, you have to feel like you need, you, you, they can do something for you that you can't do for yourself. And that usually comes back to manual therapy.
I mean, and I do always joke that I have the worst business model in the world because like just, you know, 3 or 4 sessions and then no one ever comes back. And it's kind of like, you know, I mean, maybe some of them don't come back because they just think it's a waste of money and they're not getting anything. But the amount of people who send me messages and write me reviews and say, holy shit, I can't believe like the difference in such a few, like, you know, I've spent thousands of pounds, like some of them 10, 15, 20,000 pounds on physical therapy. But yeah, like it is a terrible business model in so many ways, but you kind of hope that in some ways, actually just word of mouth of people, because everyone will always be paying, won't they?
Yeah. So you need to change your business model then from treating like the pain, that's it, not change it, but you need to at least change people's minds away from like, okay, when we're done, like when your pain is gone, does that mean you just go back to like just forget everything and whatever? So like there's a the evolution or the next step for someone like you or for someone like me is trying to not convince but just make people aware of like their potential, and let's say let's keep going here. Maybe if they want, but like let's start to chase performance, and that's where I kind of go from the start. Even if you're not an athlete, like performance is just like living better, feeling better, moving better. Yeah. So that's where I go from the start, because I feel like I can't lose with clients, and I've said this before, and I don't mean this in an arrogant way, but like I really want to say that first. I don't mean this in an arrogant way, but I feel like if someone comes to me in pain and they've been in pain for years, they've tried all these things and it hasn't helped. And maybe now they're like, they've stopped exercising, they're putting on weight, their mental health is like they're suffering, they're not happy, all these things, right? So if you were to say to that person, okay, in 3 months' time, your pain will be the same, but you're way stronger, your body composition has improved significantly, you're much happier, you're much more active, all these things, and your pain isn't worse. Yeah. You're back doing like you're back playing tennis or doing some of these things that you love. Would you take that? Yes, you would definitely take that. So let's chase all those things. Let's improve all those things. Let's chase them very, very hard. And along the way, usually the pain just kind of starts to go away or diminishes significantly when we start to tick off all the boxes we need to tick off versus like just putting all our focus on like, let's get rid of the pain. Let's get rid of the pain. So that's why I feel like I can't lose with clients, because I definitely know I can help people get stronger. I can help people like move a bit better, improve their movement options, their variability, how happy they are, all these things. And usually along the way, pain just kind of goes away as well.
I guess that takes us in some ways onto like, let's say your, you know, not your model, but like what's, you know, I think you've managed to do so well compared to so many else in the you know, in the world of whatever it is that we do. But, you know, your lower body basics programs, which cost fuck all, essentially, you know, and they, well, as you've kind of said, they're what you would do for people. That's what it's, how do you put it? It's basically, if they come to you, you want them to be able to do these. So do them before you come to see me.
Yeah. I like people. I just think of like certain skills that people need to be able to do, or I'd love to. So I wrote the first program, Lower Body Basics, initially, where it was just like, okay, my client list had been filled up, and it was like, okay, what are the things that like I pretty much always do with people? Not necessarily always in the first session, but early on, like I pretty much always do. So like there's some like movement to the pelvis and the sagittal plane, the frontal plane, the transverse plane. And like a mixture of those things, there's some kind of like isometric hamstring strength and maybe some calf like intermuscular coordination there. There's some kind of pushing through the midfoot and the forefoot where they're starting to build strength there. A little bit of breathing stuff. And Yeah, just kind of a mixture of that, those things, some kind of squatting type of motion, hinging type of motion, maybe. And when it was, so I put it there initially, it was like, okay, maybe I can make some more money by just giving an offering of a program, so that, because our client list is full. But what I ended up realizing was, yes, we could make some more money. It sold well, and like, it was excellent business wise. But what I realized was, when I did have spaces then to take on new clients, these people had already done this program, and they were almost coming to me saying, here's the areas, like, okay, those things I'm struggling with. So I could almost like base my assessment on, like, I'm listening to what they're saying, and then they're saying, like, I actually really struggle with that exercise. And I'm like, in my mind, like, okay, they're saying, like, okay, the 90-90 knee rolls or the scissor slides, and I feel my TFL cramp up, like, and it really feels nasty when I do that. Straight away, I know, like, okay, maybe they don't have 90 degrees of hip flexion, hip internal rotation. They struggle to, like, shift their pelvis in that way, blah, blah, blah. So it almost served as, like, an assessment tool, and then it just became a really cool way of helping people to help themselves, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes, that does make sense. And, like, you know, in it, I think I'm pretty certain I heard in one of the podcasts of yours anyway, but, you know, I know we both talk about, like, but the movement of the pelvis, and, you know, this is one of those things of, it kind of gets stuck. Well, it's kind of stuck between our head and our feet, and, you know, it's kind of the bit in the middle, and everyone gets low back pain and blah, 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 blah. But, you know, one of the things that, as you just kind of alluded to in there, was like, how much, you know, just being able to look at those three planes of motion. So kind of forward and back, left and right, and round and round, and, you know, putting some of those movements into there, like, you know, in the program, there's like really simple things that just about anyone could do. So again, it, like you say, it's kind of, you kind of work with everyone, but, like, you know, in, if you're just gen pop, like being able to just lay on the floor and realize, and it's what the fucking hilarious thing was, like, you know, there'd be times I would try some of the, I can't remember what you call them, but like feet on the wall, like a ball or a foam roller between your knees, and just like, just try and find that little bit of kind of transverse plane rotation. I mean, I used to do it with some footballers at Ipswich Town Football Club. And, you know, these technically, inverted commas, elite athletes, nothing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No movement whatsoever.
Yeah. And they are, like, they are elite athletes. And that's the thing. For elite athletes, like, they're a big part of their job is actually limiting relative motion. It's kind of getting enough stiffness around the hip and the feet and the ankles and the spine, even where it's actually what makes them very robust a lot of the time, where they're like, they're able to create a lot of stiffness, and that stiffness can translate into like striking explosive the ground hard, explosive power and stuff like that. Absolutely. But definitely for footballers, like, they need a lot of variability in their game. For sprinters, let's say, for example, like, you'll actually see very, very limited range, relative motion in sprinters. If you lay a good sprinter, I've worked with some like top class sprinters, and you lay them on a table or you do assessment with them, you'll see like almost no hip internal rotation, actually like zero, very little ER, dorsiflexion. If you actually look at dorsiflexion of a top 100 meter sprinter, it will be almost non-existent. They'll go to push their knee forward and their heel just comes up with it. So these are the things that allow them to
be the
put
best.
A lot of force. Yeah, exactly. But at some stage, maybe that becomes too much. They've moved too far into that direction. And our job can be like to take them back out of that, be unspecific to sport, to take them out and just say, okay, you are also, yes, you're a footballer, but you're also a human being who would love to be able to shift your hips and stuff like that. So the relative motion stuff isn't necessarily going to make a sprinter faster all of the time. But it could be the thing that keeps them healthy enough so that they can train harder and not feel like shit, and they get a little bit more output from their nervous system, and there's less inhibition there because there's a bit of pain or whatever, and that can be the thing that makes them faster. So that it just comes back to the individual, and I haven't haven't seen people that can't benefit from maybe just getting a little bit, or athletes in particular, particularly when they're like a little bit more stiff already, just getting a little bit of that relative motion back in their body. Their brain seems to suck it up and seems to love it. And
I was going to say, most of those, like the players I'd end up working with would all be like the injured, you know, I'd always get like given the injured players, let's say. And again, we've kind of gone back to, you know, why pain, whatever, but you know, that lack of IR in the, through the femur, through the pelvis, through the hip, you know, there's almost, you know, the mechanism just speaks to actually having less, some, like, as you say, like having that stiffness to actually be able to drive into the floor and strike through, but then having some, you know, actually having some degree of movement would actually be kind of handy for them.
It would be. It definitely would be. And they'll find a way of doing it. They'll find a way of getting it. Usually like through the spine and stuff like that. But it just comes back to like giving people options back. And when you lose options, you're in trouble. You only have one path, and that path gets worn out very quickly.
Yeah. Now, something like purely, I'm going to ask this for my own like greedy, selfish, I've got you on the phone, so I want to know more about it for myself, you know, whether or not other people find it interesting as fuck them, I don't care. But isometrics. Now, this is something which, you know, has never really been in my wheelhouse, let's say. And I've done them, obviously, because I've definitely done lower body basics 1 and 2. And I think I've got the core one as well. But can you explain? So for anyone's not sure what like an isometric is, like what is it, let's say, to begin with, and potentially what for you, how do you find that they are so beneficial? Because obviously there's bits and pieces which I have seen you doing and talking about now for 4 years. And I see, you know, you're literally traveling the world now, doing workshops, and there's like certain movements, especially like the hamstring. And in fact, you gave me one of these, was it lockdown or pre-lockdown? I can't remember whenever it was. We did a bit of work together, but the hamstring isometrics, they're almost like, I see people doing them every time. I'm sure you're not the first person to do them by any stretch, but like I see them doing them and I kind of go, that looks like a David Gray move. And then when I look at who they follow, it's like, it's you who they follow. So it's kind of, you know, they're clearly a, for you, like an important thing that really benefit like athletes and probably Gen Pop as well. But why?
Good question. So an isometric is just where there's like no movement. So for example, you could just get into like a squat position, sink down to wherever you want it and just hold it there. So there's no movement. That can be at one joint, that can be or one part of your body, or that could be everywhere. So for example, in the squat, you could drop down and you could just freeze everything in place and hold it there. You'll feel a lot of the muscles in your leg burning very quickly. Or that could be like, you could drop down into the squat and try and hold your lower body there, but twist your upper body around and do whatever. So, so like you can get an isometric at one area or everywhere. With regards to like why they're important, so it's kind of like there's two ends to the spectrum. There's the relative motion end of the spectrum, which is like our mobility, being able to move all our joints, and then there's the stiffness end of the spectrum, which is like being able to actually freeze degrees of freedom at the joint. So if you imagine like a rugby player or a footballer, a rugby player is probably a little bit easier to example or to use as an example, where like they have the ball in their hand, they're dancing around and stuff like that. So like there's so many degrees of freedom at all of our joints. So like even just the foot, there's so many options there, so many options at our knees, at our hips. And then there's so many combinations when you put all those joints together. So there's literally an unlimited amount of combinations, and then our spine and blah, blah, blah. So there's too much really for our body or nervous system to be able to handle if all these joints can just go in all different directions. So at high speed movement, what the nervous system does is it starts with a lot of tension in the muscle. There's almost like a pre-activation before the foot hits the floor. There's just this pre-activation that's going to occur where the calf, the tibialis anterior, the foot muscles, the hamstrings, the quads, they have a pretty high level of pre-activation, so that there's a certain amount of tension, so that we can actually freeze degrees of freedom, so that our foot can strike the floor. And it would be too late if, let's say, our foot is striking the floor when we're sprinting or we're going to change direction, it would be too late for us to strike the floor and then tense up our muscles.
Yeah.
So there's just too much force coming up into our body at that stage. So the body usually starts with like a lot of isometric tension in certain muscles. And then when we're on the floor, in high speed movements, isometric tension. So if you think about like an Achilles tendon, for example, when the foot strikes the floor, if we want to like jump as high as possible and quickly off the floor, so we're going to do a drop jump, like we're going to step off a high box, we're going to strike the floor, and we want to be really quick off the floor and also go pretty high, then we actually can't drop, we can't sink down into the movement, or we're going to be lengthening muscles and it's going to be too slow. And if you're trying to sidestep someone in sport or something like that, if you sink down, you're going to be way too slow. So you could jump high in that instance, but you're going to be too slow. So what our kind of answer to that is a lot of pre-activation in the muscles before the foot strikes the floor, and then a lot of this isometric tension in the muscles, so that actually instead of like sinking down into the muscles and getting a stretch through the muscles so we can get a return through there, it stretches the Achilles tendon instead, and we get this fast elastic return, which is a very powerful, results in a very powerful movement. Another example is like how isometrics can help keep us safe. So let's say you're a rugby player, you're running with the ball, someone else is coming to tackle you, and you actually want to hand them off. Yeah. So you're going to like put your hand out and try and like push them in the chest as they come to tackle you. So all in that instance, like all the muscles around your arm is going to be pretty straight, won't be locked straight usually, but there'll be a tiny bit of bend in the elbow. And at that instance, when there's like that, ooh, I strike that person in the chest with my hand, the elbow is going to be like, just hopefully staying still in place. And what allows that to happen is a lot of isometric tension around the forearm flexors and extensor sensors, the distal biceps, the distal triceps, and the shoulder joint as well, and the wrist joint as well. A little bit less around the wrist in that instance. Mm. And hopefully then I can like push the force from the ground all the way out, up through my spine, out through my fingertips and into that person's body, so that they can push away from me. If I can't like create that isometric tension, then their chest, like they're going to keep coming, my elbow is going to bend, and all that force starts to come into my body. So that is not a particularly safe thing, because like I'm just crumbling in that instance. So I think it's easier to maybe think about the safety aspect with regards to upper body and upper limb with that example. But the same thing is happening when our foot hits the floor. It's that like,
yeah,
are you just going to crumble, or are you going to have some tension there to maybe hold the joints in place? And it just comes back to, it's like the footballer conversation where we're talking about like relative motion, where they actually maybe end up too stiff some of the time and they need to get back this relative motion. But usually it's not like, oh, you're just too stiff or you're just too loosey goosey. Usually it's like a mix of these things, and you need to learn at certain joints to be able to stiffen up and other joints to be able to like relax and maybe get some movement there. And also, it's not just like a binary thing, like it's one or the other. It's a continuum. And these are skills. Like you need to have the skill of being able to stiffen up when you need to, and also let it go when you don't need it. So that's why isometrics can be important, or some of the reasons why isometrics can be important, because it's actually a coordinative thing. It's a tension between a lot of groups of muscles usually. And it's a timing thing. And so it's funny enough, because isometrics and plyometrics kind of go well together, even though one, there's no movement, and plyometrics is very fast movement. Yeah. But almost in both, it's like, yes, there's a lot of movement. Like there's a lot of motion happening overall in a plyometric, but usually the muscles are isometric, are acting in an isometric like fashion so that the tendons can stretch.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like, especially tart those two together. Those isometrics, when you see them, especially the, let's say the hamstring one, that's kind of, like I say, you're kind of what I consider like the David Gray move. But like, yeah, that tends to be like one of those exorcism type places, which is always it's a great thing to see on, you know, you can, it's really visual on Instagram and stuff, but it baffles people. Like, again, it doesn't really matter how fit and active and whatever else they are, whether they, you know, they can do Nordics left, right and center, but finding that, I guess, that, like you said, that stiff, that tension, that engagement in that isometric shape really does tend to make people's hamstrings kind of shit the bed.
Yeah, it's just that there's something that happens to the hamstring, the calf, when you, so it's usually like the foam roller bridge. It's the foam roller bridge that you're describing.
Well,
that
gets people too. Cool.
When you like push your foot through the floor, but in that like supine position, let's say, it feels very different than like a hamstring curl on a machine, which is fine too. I like that stuff as well. Or like a Nordic or anything like that. There's this active tension, and also like the pelvis, we take into account like pelvis position and stuff like that. And it just forces people into a position where there's a disgusting amount of load through the belly and the distal hamstring, the belly, the hamstrings and the distal hamstrings, and through the calves as well. And like with an active foot through the floor, and at a certain knee angle that usually is like that mid stance position in gait. And a lot of like, I don't know, it's, I can't exactly explain the mechanism, but like it seems to help a lot of people's knees when they have knee issues. It really, like, it's thousands, and I get messages every single day, every single week, dozens of messages, in fact, every single month, let's say. And a lot of people feel their knees a lot better when they start to do that. So I don't know. I have ideas why, but I can't say exactly why.
Yeah.
It seems to help. And also you just build a shit ton of strength there.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I think quite often, you know, you can, like you said, there's something about hamstring curls or, you know, calf raises or whatever else, but there's like hamstring strength and like that kind of lower body posterior chain strength always seems to be like the bit more lacking, I guess. You know, people kind of will glute bridge the shit out of them, or, you know, like will like glute kickbacks or whatever else to try and clam and whatever else and shorten that muscle all the time. But there's something, there is, yeah, when you get people to do those foam roller bridges or something, like they will cramp in seconds. Yeah. And it's always funny.
Well, hamstrings aren't that sexy. Like glutes are sexy.
They can
quads can be. quads look great in the mirror, and quads are really important. They're all important. I don't place any more importance on any muscle than any other muscle.
But most people do, though, or most people, subconsciously do.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe it's just the fact that like people aren't training these muscles as well. I just want to make sure I'm like completely unbiased, let's say, in terms of exercise selection, I think. No, that's a lie. But I try to be unbiased in terms of like, and not just exercise selection, but looking at movement and saying, okay, what movement do you struggle with?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to try and help you with that.
Yeah.
I don't care what it is. I just feel like if you just completely can't access or you're not strong in a certain position that seems to be relevant to you, obviously there needs to be a relevance to it, then I'm just going to get you strong there and help you access that. And that just seems to be a good way of doing things. Doesn't mean we won't also focus on your strengths, but in movement, especially with people who are struggling at the moment with movement, which is usually more the people that I'm working with, like just bringing up some areas or shining light on some areas that they really struggle to move into and they're not strong, that seems to do a lot. It's more than just like one plus one equals two. It's more than like, okay, you're just weak here, I'm just going to make this better, and this should just nudge you forward a little bit. It seems like you're struggling here. And actually, when we bring this up, like now everything else feels amazing as well.
Yeah.
So
I guess that's kind of that thing of, and maybe this is, you know, you alluded to it earlier, but like the idea of like timing / muscle coordination versus purely like building strength as such. Because, you know, I heard you, I've forgotten his name now, one of the last podcasts you did, like three back, an American guy, but, you know, I can't remember what you would, quite which bit we were talking about in that now. It highlighted it to me and I've forgotten, but the idea of like just, you know, when I was at the football club, let's say, a lot of the work was you've been injured. Okay, let's just build strength in it, but actually not necessarily. Oh, it's the FRC stuff. And you were talking about, you know, it's all very well maybe isolating, you know, an ankle, but that doesn't necessarily then correlate into a full body coordination of getting, you know, tibialis anterior and, you know, all of soleus and everything to fire at the right time in the right moment. And actually being able to have, I'm going to inverted commas say weaker muscles and not weaker, but, you know, having muscles which aren't necessarily able to lift the same volume of weight, but which work in coordination with the whole body, the chances of performance being improved by greater timing and coordination is probably going to be like outstrip just having a stronger muscle and probably more like, well, I don't know, potentially more likely to prevent injury again going forward.
Yeah, I think, like, and we've all seen, like, athletes, we've all played different sports when we were younger, and not just when we were younger now, but, like, we've all seen and we've worked with teams and stuff like that where there seems to be a guy that, like, or a girl that looks terrible in the gym. They're just not strong in that way at all, but they go out in the field and their body positioning, their reading of the game, their coordination, they never seem like they're in the wrong position.
Yeah,
they always are in the right position. And when you, like, when you hit into them or you try and take the ball off them or whatever, like, they seem so strong, they seem so well put together, they're so rarely injured.
Yeah.
And it does like, it should make us think a little bit, because again, I see athletes who are actually, like, they're so commonly injured, they keep tearing their hamstring, and they have the best scores on the Nordic Curl Nord board. Like, they have the strongest in the team at the Nordic Curls. Why? Because they've done the most amount of Nordic Curls, so they're getting better and better and better at that, but no one is, they still keep getting injured. So I'm not saying they're getting injured because of the Nordic Curls, but, like, at some stage we have to maybe question, like, okay, is this actually helping? Like, if they are way stronger than the guy who's the weakest and at that exercise, and the weakest guy is not getting injured, then surely there's something else at play, another phenomenon that we need to look into. Now, there is the argument of, like, okay, that guy who's, like, weak in the gym, but, like, performs and moves incredibly well on the field for his sport. I know which one I would rather be if I was a professional athlete. I would rather be the guy that moves really well on the field in the sport than in the gym. But the argument is, and it's a valid argument, what if you could take that person and get them way stronger as well?
Yeah.
So, like, that is a valid argument. But that comes along with the thing of, okay, yes, absolutely, that can work. But you at least have to be aware and acknowledge that there's potential for you to cause some negative transfer by trying that as well. And we don't exactly know, but, like, at least acknowledge that, okay, if you're going to say, like, oh, there's a massive upside here, yes, we can make them move way better and be way stronger if they get all really good at this gym stuff, at least acknowledge maybe we can make them worse as well.
Yeah. I mean, like, quite a few of the footballs, I really, they just wanted to go into the gym and have a fucking ripping six pack.
Arms, six pack, and, like, why wouldn't they? That's part of their brand and part of everyone's confidence and stuff like that.
Absolutely,
100%. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, we've kind of nearly banged out an hour, which is ridiculous, but you know, we'll I won't take up too much more of your time, but as always, we'll round off with my one actual question that I kind of put together, which is, you know, it's a podcast called Move, Breathe, Live. And I hope that people who are listening to this can maybe learn something, take it into their life, or, you know, even if it's just like, oh shit, I'm going to go and check out Low Body Basics or whatever it might be. That could be your thing. Just give me your money.
I won't say that. Don't worry.
I will. No, I won't really. If you had a little tip, a cue, something that maybe someone could take away from this that they could maybe put into their life to help move, breathe, live a happier, healthier life, potentially, what might it be?
So move, breathe, live. So if there's one thing that I know will help people breathe better, I'm almost certain will help people live better and will help people move better, it is walking a bit more. So that's my easiest answer, I think. And I would put it like a little caveat on top of that, which is if it's as particularly if it's in nature. I think I know everyone doesn't necessarily have access to nature all of the time, but I would say at least outside if you can. That doesn't mean like, oh, if I'm not walking at all and I go for a walk on the treadmill, absolutely going for a walk on the treadmill is better than not walking at all if you're just sitting on your ass all day. But better than that is getting outside, and better than that is getting outside in nature. And there's we know about this like phenomenon from like psychology research and mental health research and all that stuff, that like getting out in nature is very helpful for people's mental health. We know that. We've known that for a long time, and the research backs that up. So we know that people will feel a bit better through that. And we can even measure, like now with Whoop bands and Oura rings, you start to see like resting heart rates go down, which probably correlates with like their breathing being slowing down and getting a little bit smoother. We're also going to pick up a lot of relative motion when we go for a walk. We're starting to move our joints every single, obviously, as you know, or anyone who knows like from Gary's work or just looks at gait in general, like you're going to go through pretty much every single joint action when you go for a walk. Not like the largest amount of movement that they can go through, but the bones are going to be moving in those directions at least. And then on top of that, you're starting to get like the eyesight, the peripheral vision, all of that stuff. Your world just starts to open. All your senses are getting stimulated in terms of sounds and sights and different feelings at your feet and all this stuff. So I think walking is like incredibly underrated, incredibly helpful for people. And if we could just do a little bit more of that, particularly in nature, people would feel way better.
Yeah, I love that. I absolutely love it. When I get people first come to me, I mean, I know there's other, you know, PTs and stuff to talk about, but literally one of the first things I always ask is, you know, essentially, you know, what's your step count? Do you know what I mean? Because even for those people wanting to lose weight, like sometimes going to the gym, lifting, running, you know, it's just even like I get quite a lot of women who come see me and they've, you know, with massive tits and they've all got back pain and whatever else, and like, and it's kind of like they hate doing exercise because it's really uncomfortable, and it's kind of like you could just go for a walk, you know. This is like walking can be comfortable, you know. You don't have to, as one of them suggests, I basically feel like I give myself a black eye every time I try to do any exercise. So actually just going for a walk and upping from 3,000-4,000 steps a day to, and I know that 10,000 steps a day is just an arbitrary number that someone made up, but you know, just try to double your steps from wherever you are. And from a caloric point of view, that's going to be a benefit. From a, as you've pointed out, mental health, being in nature, if you can get out there, you've not only got more movement, but you've got, as you said, better breathing with hopefully some fresher air. You've taken in that whole wider range of like peripheral vision. It's kind of, I love that, because it's pretty much one of my go-tos. So
yeah, it's really underrated, really like simple, easy. It's just a habit like that you need to try and stick to. I didn't do much walking out, like my walking for a couple of years didn't feel so good. My body felt like a bit of a mess. I was very compressed and it didn't feel good, so I didn't walk. And it's like and that's what happens with a lot of people in pain. In particular, a certain joint doesn't feel good, so they stop moving that joint. But it's a paradox, because like what helps that joint feel good is moving that joint. Just finding the right level. So yeah, it's just a habit, finding the right level and then nudging it forward. But yeah, I'm with you. I think if you went to a lot of countries or a lot of like our grandparents and generations back, they weren't going to the gym. Like we see exercise now as, yeah, they were probably doing maybe a little bit more manual labor or whatever, but for the most part, their movement throughout the day was just walking around.
Yeah.
And not getting their heart rate up super, super high. It was, which like we're now living longer than them because of better medicine, better healthcare, and hopefully we know more about stuff. So yes, we're living a bit longer, but like for the most part, they were pretty healthy as well.
Yeah.
And they weren't doing like CrossFit wads or anything like that. Maybe they would have been a bit healthier if they were getting their heart rate up, but like, we don't need to just think of exercise as that we can just get our steps in, and it's going to tick a lot of boxes, I think.
Amazing. Well, I think, I'll definitely agree with you on that one. So where can people find you? Like, what's your website? Obviously, I'll put everything in the show notes, but, you know, what's your programs you've got? Because I know you've just obviously released a new one, which is Foot and Achilles, but just, yeah, tell people where they can check it out and who it's for, whatever else, and then.
I think the best place is just to go to David Gray Rehab on Instagram. So yep. David, G-R-E-Y, Rehab. And because that's like, people can just like
find everything.
Yeah, they can just kind of have a look and say, okay, either I like this guy or I don't, and
yeah,
I'll keep following or I won't. And from there, like, they can go to the website and they can see like the lower body program. That's usually where people start, is that program, where, because I think getting your pelvis and hips moving really well is a good idea. It's a good place to start in general. It's not always like that, okay, this is going to fix all your problems, but like getting your pelvis and hips and a little bit of lower body strength is a good idea. So that's usually where I like people to start. But then, yeah, we have a new program, Foot and Achilles one, which is more specific for like lower leg issues. And but in general, people can just go to Instagram and have a look from there.
Perfect. Well, I'll stick that, and I'll stick your website on there as well, so people know where it is if they just want to jump straight to it and jump in. But thanks, Dave. That was a pleasure getting to chat to you. I feel like it's been ages since we caught up properly last. So, yeah, thanks to Kira as well for doing all the stuff in the background.
Thanks for having me. I'm a little bit under the weather. I just took a Nurofen and I had a coffee there before I came on. So hopefully I was like some way coherent.
And 100%, mate.
Not too nasally, but yeah, thanks for having me on. And I'm looking forward to seeing how you develop over the next little while as well.
Yeah, well, thanks. Yeah, thanks for the advice as well. So cheers again, mate. That was an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
Cheers, Dave. Nice one.